Welcome to the Daily VFN Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome to the Extra Hour. Pat and John is joining me. I just got to say, John does such an excellent job at that intro. That does you a good, great job. And welcome to the VFN Radio Program. Practice. I can't even do it. I don't know how you do this. That's amazing. Mm. That's totally amazing. You're listening to VFN Radio in the Extra Hour. And if you missed the first hour, you need to catch it because there is hope. Americans are coming together and standing up for what's right.
No, that's right.
And it happens to be Christians and Muslims standing together against the policies in Egypt where a lot of the government has been supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. Because I remember when the North Carolina senator and
Lindsey Graham,
and then his cohort
John McCain,
they go over there. These grown men go over there.
Oh my goodness!
And they go, I just can't believe what's going on over here. I'm just totally surprised that this is actually happening. I had no idea.
That's right? Offensive to any American. It's like, why are we sending you to Washington D.C. if you have no idea?
You know, how he said, I had no idea. I had no idea that this was happening over here in Egypt. Didn't he say
just like that?
And I'm just shocked. And we're going to begin today to do what we should have been doing a long time ago. And then of course McCain's looking just wide eyed over there going like I ain't gonna
I'm not with him.
And it's like, what are you doing? The Muslim Brotherhood was banned by Mubarak. He didn't even show up at your party in Cairo. Mm. He ends up in jail after that. The Muslim Brotherhood begins to immediately to push a caliphate, to oppress women, to oppress the church, to run off Israel. The Jews closed down their whatever in Egypt, and it's burn and torture people in the northern parts of Egypt. It's just like, how could we be supporting this?
Yeah. Then there's a huge debate about this $1.6 billion they're going to give them. It's like, we give them $1.6 billion, don't mess with Israel. They're saying now recently, well, we can't give it to them because now they're messing with the Christians. It's like, how are you going to keep stretching out that $1.6 million?
Billion dollars
to Egypt. And it's like, my goodness, we have to control people with money to act right. It's like,
I'm telling you, when you start getting a biblical worldview and you begin to really look at what America has done, because we left the gold standard, which was the kingdom of God.
Yeah. Right. My question is, if it takes $1.6 billion to control people's behaviors, what happens when you don't have the $1.6 billion and there is no money?
This is how important it is that Jordan and all, they're actually offering like $34 billion.
Exactly.
I don't know what the number is. It's like, oh, we just look like a little drop in the pan
exactly.
Now. It's like, we got to quit boasting about our $1.4 billion here.
They said they were rich. They said, we are rich.
Who?
This is Jordan. They said, we're rich. And don't worry about that $1.6 billion. Don't even worry about it.
That's right.
Like, where were you all along?
That's right.
We've been forking out this one.
Not only that, we will actually give Jordan the $1.4 billion when we give them all of our money for the oil that we're buying.
Mm, that's right.
We'll just kind of round about it, you know, and get it over there to you. But we look so pathetic at that point when all of a sudden we're trying to manipulate behavior with money, which granted, you know, if a missile costs $20 billion, you know, whatever, to fire, you know, whatever, $400 million to fire two missiles, and life is lost, it's better to, I mean, even Jesus says, win friends while you can with the money that you have. So it is biblical to take the finances that we have and try to, you know, foster peace and to help out, you know. And you can see what happens when we stop doing what we were doing with Mubarak, and all of a sudden we empowered the Muslim Brotherhood, you know. At the Cairo speech, and you can go to VFN Torch right now and listen verbatim to our president give that speech, and he painted a picture. And this is the whole thing, though, to me, is the fact that nobody really even cares.
Right.
Do you know what just happened? That our that we just the imagine this. Imagine somebody's coming to America and they're going to speak to the Americans about the future of America.
Mm-hmm.
And the president doesn't show up.
Interesting.
He doesn't show up. It's like, okay, why doesn't the president show up? Because it's important since we voted him in as the leader of our country. He needs to know, be in touch. And so Mubarak didn't even show up at the, and the president of the United States is showing up about the future of Egypt, and he doesn't even show up. But then, now think about this. Instead of, okay, this scenario is back. These people are coming to our country. The president Mubarak is coming to America, and he's going to explain this about the future of America. Our president doesn't show up. But then we invite reportedly eight members of a group that were scheduled to fly the 9/11 planes, for example, that hate our country and want to repress us. We actually invites those eight members to sit in the crowd. And the president's not there now. He is talking about the future of our country, and he has eight of these people who have been banned from our country. They're not supposed to be in our country because Mubarak banned the Muslim Brotherhood. Mm-hmm. And then
they've been banned.
If that's not bad enough, then begin to paint a picture of what a world would look like with these banned people in a country that he ain't president of, while the president is not even here, who will eventually end up in jail. Mubarak ended up in jail, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he is alive. His death has been greatly exaggerated.
No doubt.
We saw his body today on the news. He's alive. And he's not risen. He just was alive. We just thought he was dead. Anyway, so that's just terrible. But who was concerned about it? But seeing what's happening today, and if you missed it, you got to catch it in the first hour, to watch peaceful Muslims and Christians stand up for Egyptians and say, listen, we got to stop these policies promoting the Muslim Brotherhood, who are terrorists and killing us, is what she said. She said, they're killing us.
Yeah.
This is what one lady, she said, Mr. President, President Obama, please stop supporting the Muslim Brotherhood. They're killing us.
Well, remember that when the new president got established here, recently.
Morsi?
No, not Morsi. When they overthrown Morsi and got Morsi out here just recently.
Oh, the appointee one?
Yeah, the appointee one. But the people were going to the streets and were in Egypt. This is the first time that I actually saw this. In Egypt, they were saying that our president supports terrorists. And they had signs. It was serious. They were coming out for themselves and saying, we want the Muslim Brotherhood out. It's the largest demonstration, I think, ever. It was like millions of people in the streets.
Wow. Right. And it was not flattering what they said about the American ambassador.
No.
You understand, you can't. This is some reason we disassociate ourselves when we see something happen to another American or what happens in the reputation of an American. But you have to understand, that's all of our reputation.
Yeah. Travel a little bit. Go somewhere else and say you're an American. See what it feels like.
Yeah, and the fact is that's how they're talking about our president and our ambassador. That's how they're talking about us.
That's right.
You know, we don't want our president to be talked about like that. We want to be able to help out and empower him and his cabinet and whatever to be able to stand for the values of our country. And not to have the Lindsey Grahams go, I don't know what happened over here, but I'm telling you, we're going to do something about it now. You got to see that clip.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, McCain, he was quiet. And so here we are. There is hope. We're starting to see some things stir. I believe that a prophetic word is about to be loosed over America, where the Christians are going to reboot and reset themselves and position ourselves. And minimum force will be necessary, but God will apply it to us all. That'll bring us to a point of looking up and turning to God. And if you look at history, everything started in a garden with a murder scene.
Mm-hmm.
So people go, this is the worst it's ever been. No, we just have media reporting every 5 seconds about how bad we are, how bad the sin nature is. I mean, there's a camera everywhere. You need to live like you're on camera. Mm-hmm. So if you happen to see me on the beach, oh my goodness. Anyway,
Anyway.
Anyway. But there's hope. There's just hope. And I just want to encourage you, if you have not yet found a body of believers, a gathering of ones that are hearing from the Lord and desiring to position ourselves before God for this day, for this season, let me tell you, if you happen to be in the Gulf Coast region, you need to begin to come and seek out Vine Fellowship Network, this dream center that's being developed, an apostolic center to be able to be one of the foundational parts of the many parts that are in America to be able to turn the nation around. But if you can't, if you're not close geographically, you need to begin to join us virtually and join with all the virtual members that are joining us and listening and staying in tune, because we can stay together. There's so many different ways to connect today. Through VFN TV, VFN Radio, and every Sunday at 10:30 a.m. on VFN Radio, a live broadcast from a prophetic word just coming out that moment in time from the VFN Dream Center. You need to catch it, be a part of what's going on. There's hope, but you got to get under a message of hope. You got to understand your part. When I read about Dr. Carson's book in America the Beautiful, that the thing, the consistent theme throughout his book, which is really good, but you got to get it. I didn't read it for a long time because I'm thinking, okay, it's going to talk about it, spacious skies, purple seas, and purple mountains and majesty. And it had nothing to do with that. And but one consistent theme, other than, of course, God throughout the book, is sacrifice, personal sacrifice. And if you want to be a part, if you want to be a part of the kingdom of God, a part of a player in the kingdom, if you want to quit being a spectator, if you're ready to get involved and do be a doer of the word, not just a hearer, not an itching ear dictator demanding from others what you want to hear, but somebody who says, I want to hear from God and I want to be a doer of the word and blessing all that I do. Listen, Vine Fellowship Network, the VFN Dream Center is for you. You can find out more at vinefellowshipnetwork.org. vinefellowshipnetwork.org. I don't know if you heard about this in Mexico. I was watching one of my favorite. Do you know, what one of my favorite channels are on television?
Please do tell us.
Other than Too Cute. Too Cute. It has to do with the puppies and kittens. And they just video the animals and all. It's pretty it's pretty cute. It's really cool because you don't have to change a litter or play a paddle, whatever. And
virtually have the experience with a pet.
We just watch it and turn it off. Anyway, but I was watching, okay, I got to tell you, this is my favorite, believe it or not, Book TV.
Oh, come on.
What?
Book TV.
Book
C-SPAN's Book TV.
TV.
Yeah, the authors come on and they begin to talk about why they wrote the book. And,
oh, that's pretty good. I like
that. See, look at that.
I like that.
Man, convert, boom, that quick, bam.
I like this.
And so, and it's just like you get to meet the authors and hear what they talk about, and they read some of their book, and it's just so encouraging, a lot of good things. But I was, and I love to hear some of the, not all the things. I guess the one thing I don't like to see is anything to do with Congress, with C-SPAN. But when they have, you know, business leaders come on and talk, and they have local governments talking, or they have town hall meetings, and to watch people's response. But I was listening to the former American ambassador. The Mexican ambassador in America for 6 years speak. He was, I think he was about, he was speaking in Denver at the, I think it's called the Biennial of America Human Potential Conference in Colorado. And he's a former Mexican ambassador to America for 7 years. And I can't pronounce his name. It's Asturo. Last name is S-A-R-U-K-H-A-N. Yeah. I'm waiting for John. Is he lost?
I was quick.
But anyway, it was so cool because they have discovered something that we need to rediscover. They have, in the last 4.5 years, 4 to 5 years, they brought 14 million Mexicans out of poverty. 14 million.
Wow.
14 million Mexicans out of poverty. And it's like, my God. Goodness. It was the gathering was called Innovative Technology and Human Potential Conference. And you had people there like the president of Google and Liberty Media, and you had this particular former ambassador there. You had the Daily Beast, I think was the one that was the newspaper or whatever, digital paper that was there. These are the guys that are determining the direction of our world outside of us, the church rising up and saying, does it need to go that way? Because they're the ones that kind of say, like, these bought us are just bothering us. We need this world market and, you know, especially Liberty Media, by the way. Oof. Anyway, so getting back to something interesting, that the ambassador talks about how they brought 14 million Mexicans out of poverty in 4 to 5 years.
Wow.
You don't know what the secret was?
Yeah, sure.
The secret was offering support to the individual, government help, you know, this taxpayers giving money to the government and the government offering assistance to these people who are in poverty. One more thing, with expectations.
Oh, okay.
With expectations.
Was waiting for the second foot there, okay.
Yeah, and these are the expectations. It's going to blow. First of all, they did not give the money to the fathers. They give the money to the mothers. Because based on what this ambassador says, they give the money to the fathers. The fathers go spend it on alcohol. They go spend it on, this is what he's
That's
saying.
Sad.
And they waste the money. But the mother is going to spend it on, and she has to, in regards to this plan, on that child. And what she has to do, she has to commit to keep her children in school and with a certain GPA, grade point average, and she has to take her child to the doctor on a regular basis to get the shots.
Wow.
And what happens is her child is the one that comes out of poverty.
Oh, wow.
When she's willing to sacrifice and know that her child's going to be taken care of, and I got to make sure her GPA stays up, I got to make sure I get them to the doctor, get their shots, and keep them in school, then 14 million, John, 14 million. Mm. What happens is right now, we don't give any expectations at all.
No.
None. And it's like, is that really helping anybody? Some reason our society is, I mean, he's like, you know, God has expectations of us.
Yeah.
And life has expectations of us. And if you live a life that you've got to go this far without anybody expecting anything from you and you expecting everything from everyone else, you know, it's wow. But you've avoided reality. You've denied reality. The truth is life expects something from you and it demands something from you. And it will turn on you and hold you captive if you don't respond appropriately to it. And so what you want to do is to be able to be trained up to face the realities of life. You want to be able to be empowered. How powerful would it be to know that the money that was being given to our brothers and sisters who need a helping hand was not only meeting their present need, but it was lifting their children out of poverty, and they would be the future leaders of our country and business owners and managers and parents. And they wouldn't be in poverty, one generation away from that.
That's powerful.
And the only thing they attached to it was expectations.
Wow.
And they incorporated the parent.
Achievable expectations.
Yeah, the parent, that they had behaviors that they were going to like send a... whoever by there and to force this compliance was no showy, no checky. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. No show. If you don't show up at the doctor, you get no checky. And if you don't, your kid don't show up at school, you don't get pay, right? Mm-hmm. No showy, no pay.
That's right.
And so they let the mother be in that family structure that's happening in Mexico based on this particular former ambassador. Was she was the stable figure in the context of that child's life. And if they gave the money to her, she would make sure these things were done. And besides, what father likes to go to the doctor, right? With a kid is like, oh, great. They're sneezing all over me. Anyway, but of course I did a couple times. But they brought 14 million Mexicans out of poverty. We should pay attention to that. Mm. As a matter of fact, I believe that your mayor, former friend you used to have coffee with in Manhattan,
Bloomberg,
he went down to study that.
Did he really?
Yeah, he studied that, and he also went to was it Holland to study the bicycle thing we were talking about?
Yeah, I guess.
And he just comes back for some reason. Anyway, so, but the, think about that. Empowering people. That's what America's about, mm-hmm. is empowering people to be successful, to have a chance to be able to reach the American dream. We need to pay attention and learn from our Mexican neighbors here that they've discovered something. It's called expectations. I'm going to give you this, which is we're going to give you your neighbor's money, mm-hmm. and they're willing to give it. But all they want you to do is be successful. They want you to make good grades. They want you to be healthy. They want to empower you so you no longer have to live under poverty.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
When the kids are young, it feels impossible trying to find time for yourself and your spouse. But you have to do that for the sake of your sanity and the strength of your marriage. This is John Fuller, and therapist Terry Reiser offers this reminder on today's Focus on the Family Minute.
If you believe that these things have to be a high priority, that you must nurture yourself, all aspects of yourself, that you must nurture the marriage relationship, and that those two areas have to be put ahead of the children, then that means, yes, because children are so demanding and so 24/7, that'll take some real intentionality, which means you may have to swap out with a friend. You may have to crawl begging to your parents, you know, for a regular, you know, babysitting slot. Whatever it takes, you have to. You can't go for 4, 5, 6 years of these earliest years without nurturing yourself and the marriage relationship.
You'll find trusted advice for your relationship at focusonthefamily.com/marriage.
We found another way how you can stay connected with VFN Radio. It's the Torch newsletter. Every week, the Torch goes out into your email, whether it's on your phone, tablet, or home PC. The Torch newsletter is going to give you the best of the best of VFN Radio for that week. It's also going to give you all the latest highlights. Of course, you can sign up by going to VFNTV.com and selecting newsletter sign up, or you can text VFNTV at 22828 and type in your email address. Sign up for the Torch newsletter now. Steve, have you seen our Facebook page?
Yeah.
Dude, it's awesome. You know, for all of our radio subscribers, you can go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/VFNTV. Every day, there's fresh segments that are posted on there, and it's a great way for you to stay connected and be in touch. I want to encourage you, too, to encourage your friends to like our page. We want to continue to get the good news out, to share encouraging stories, to share God's news behind the news, as well as informing you, educating, and inspiring you. Again, check us out at facebook.com/VFNTV, and don't forget to like us.
I don't know if you heard about the podcast, but I'm excited about the podcast.
Talk to us.
The podcast for VFN TV, the Daily Radio Program. Look, think about it. Mm-hmm. A podcast, this is what a podcast does. It happens without you doing anything.
Oh, that's good.
Once you subscribe to the our podcast, the entire day's programs, teachings that are loosed, if they're available on VFN TV, released, the highlights, you know, the each individual highlights that you see on the VFN Torch. I mean, this automatically, if you subscribe to the podcast, and it's a podcast, it will just download somehow miraculously into your computer, into your iPhone, into your Android, and you don't even need to be hooked up in the Wi-Fi or anything like that.
It's good.
It just will automatically download it, so you can listen to what you want to listen to when you want to listen to it, because it's sitting inside your phone, your iPod, your Android, your computer. It's sitting in there like it's a song that you purchased and sits in your playlist. That's what a podcast is, which is pretty cool, because what that means is this, that everything that's ever happened in the broadcast, all these different topics and wisdom and everything that we're sharing with you to encourage you, but also to encourage others, that you can have them yourself. You don't have to buy them. You don't have to sign up to get something. They just download automatically through the podcast. Make sure you check it out. Go to VFNTV.com and subscribe to the podcast today.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Joining me is Pat and John. We were just talking about over 14 million people being brought out of poverty in Mexico. Mm. And if you missed it, you can catch it on The Torch. It's going to be made available. You can watch the... Actually, fast forward just to listen to the ambassador. You don't want to hear about the president, Google, and what they're planning on doing and Liberty. You don't want to hear about... you can kind of see the future of our world and mm-hmm. what's going to be taking place. But listen to the ambassador talk about how 14 million people were brought out of poverty. And when you're interviewing about who you're going to vote for in the future elections, ask them these simple questions, you know, that of what you've learned from your experience. What are your plans to empower people that are presently in poverty so that they won't be in poverty anymore? What laws are you going to enact? What bills are you going to write? What are you going to do? How are you going to, or are you going to spend your entire term just oppressing a people? Not even thinking about how to bring them out of poverty, to give them the same chance that everybody else. The greatest tragedy, I've been speaking, about Dr. Carson's book, and he starts off talking about our horrific history of things and the positive things and the negative things. And he's an African American. He's talking about slavery and the oppressions of the all the way up until the 50s and the 60s and his personal experiences and all that. But then he concludes with this. He says, but one of the greatest travesties is, it's obviously paraphrasing it, is the economic injustices that are taking place. Mm. That you can have the same expectations of me, but you never gave me the same opportunities. Mm. That you're complaining about my economic status, but you didn't let me go to good schools. You had separate but equal going on, and all of a sudden now I was in a lesser funded school. My mother works harder probably than most other people, you know, he would say, but still, because there was no pay, there was an unjust scale of pay, mm-hmm. They had to live in certain, and his father just left them mm-hmm. early on, hardworking mother, but it put them in the economic place in the neighborhood that they were in. They were in a neighborhood that people were treated unjustly based on the color of their skin. They were automatically stereotyped. You know, the spirit of racism kept them in an environment that was oppressive to his friends and his friends' friends. And he lost his friends because when you know, so many people in America don't have a grid for growing up. I mean, your neighbors are your neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, you shop where you shop. Mm-hmm. You don't get to pick those things. And if you just happen to be in a neighborhood where there's inequality taking place in there, I mean, that's where you got to grow up. So some people can casually go home from school, and some people got to run home from school.
Man.
Right?
Absolutely.
Concord Drive and all that. The way that we can bring justice to America is to bring give everybody an economic fair chance in our economy, which means all. And another thing that was brought up, I don't think he brought this up, but I thought was pretty interesting. As long as we base school funding off property taxes, then the less advantaged kid that lives inside of someone else's house,
right,
will always have a low funded school. Mm. This is just something that came over and I was listening to, and I'm like, that makes really good sense. I think it was, it was in Harlem. They were talking at the Apollo, I think, and they had several authors, and it's about the reading situations and some radicals and some non-radicals. I like to listen to all the viewpoints. But the truth is, as long as you base it off property taxes, that's how your books are going to be built, how your school is going to be built, and how mm-hmm. your buses are going to be there, and how security is going to be there. You know, and I'm living in some apartment building, you know, and my school's never going to be funded. the way yours is funded, because you're living in some penthouse in some suburbs, mm-hmm. and you know, and you're living in, I mean, I don't know if you ever watched the Discovery Channel on these houses that people buy. It's like you're living in a $1.2 million house.
Wow. Houses? Have you seen the tree houses that they have made?
Yeah.
I mean, the tree houses.
And I'm thinking, you know, so you think of, okay, a percentage off your $1.2 million house there in Southern California, you know, one bedroom house. And you're paying in school taxes there. But then you go to the Bronx, or you go to, I don't know, Patterson, or I don't know, I can't think. You know,
Detroit.
Yeah, Detroit. And it's just not there. The money's not there under that kind of. Mm-hmm. And you think the fairest thing in America, I mean, everybody has to do it, is they have to pay sales tax. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be cool if everybody was paying for their own education and everybody was contributing to education? I mean, the fairest thing, I mean, I'm not promoting anything or anything like that. But it'd be cool that if, instead of lotteries, that's what we've gotten to, right? We've gotten to lotteries. Instead of thinking, like, I don't want a sales tax, let's just do gambling. Gambling's how we're going to educate our kids.
That'll work.
That'll work, you know. And so, but even the kid himself would pay towards his own education. Mm-hmm. When he goes and buys his PlayStation 2, he also paid for part of that book he's going to read.
That's right.
Wow.
Or that teacher that he's going to teach him. Mm-hmm. You know, and this also relieves the burden of the homeowner, property owner, having to pay for everything in the context of that. But in turn, they would have to pay, you know, the same sales tax and help. And then more people. And if you're contributing, it's amazing when your kids start to put money in the pot, how much more involved they are and how it functions. Mm. But prior to them putting anything in, having an investment, have some skin in the game, as Dr. Right. Ben Carson says in his book, America the Beautiful, it just helps us out. We have a little skin in the game. Mm-hmm. He gives one comparison about how to handle medical, how to handle the he's a doctor, he's a brain surgeon. Right. Can you imagine a presidential debate?
Well, the brain surgeon.
You decide that, you know, you're like, okay, I'm going to run for president. You finally got enough nerve. Enough people lied to you and said you're the right person.
Right.
You know, you're fixing to run. And next thing you know, you find out you're going to be debating a brain surgeon. Can you imagine?
You're in trouble, buddy.
You are in trouble. You talk for 1 hour and he looks at you and just kind of turns his head sideways and the devil just attacks you going, oh my goodness. You thinking I'm supposed to do a brain surgeon. Anyway, so... He said, you know, he said, take food stamps, for example. That's what he said. That you have electronic money transferred to a card, a SNAP card or something, and he called it food stamps, and you get an allotted amount of money every month. Well, you can go that first 2 or 3 days of getting that allotted amount of money, and you can go buy porterhouse steaks, you can buy all this different kind of stuff, but you're going to suffer for the rest of that month.
That's right.
Realizing that you're going to have to think better and plan better and how to spread this food. And so you find out that that particular mother will become intensely involved in how she's going to spread that finance herself out over a 30-day period. And she will buy a lesser quality of this, or she'll instead of buying all this prefab food, she'll buy flour and sugar and water or whatever, and she'll make these things and they'll eat well. But she would have thought that whole month out. She has an allotted amount of money, and that involved her in the process. She pays the consequences, or he pays the consequences, and his family pays the consequences as they blow that whole allotted amount of money that month. And I'm not talking about food stamps. I'm talking about that. That's his analogy of it. You know, Dr. Ben Carson's analogy of it, but it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says, you know, begin to think about that if we did medical the same way. You know, and that the medical expenses were given out in that same way, where everybody goes to the emergency room for everything. Right. And it's like, this is a huge bill. Nothing gets solved in an emergency room. Emergency room is about patching you up, sending you out. And if there was a lot amount of money, then we would go to one of these clinics, these medical clinics from the same hospital, to see a doctor who would help us up, patch us up, but also cure us from whatever it was. And it would cost a smidgen of what it would cost to go to the emergency room. So that individual would say, listen, we have a lot amount of money available for our medical treatment for our family. We need to make wiser decisions with it.
That's right.
And then all of a sudden now people are thinking about where they're spending their money at.
Right.
But then he says, you know, then you have, you know, a child that is born and it needs prenatal care. It's premature. That insurance companies are being issued a $1 million bill for that one child. $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And so the insurance companies are bracing themselves, what they're doing, and they're everybody's taking on this huge, and you can't calculate how many babies are going to be born that are premature, how many people's not going to walk out their pregnancy right, how many people's doing things they shouldn't do when they're pregnant, and how many people just naturally end up having a child this way. Either way, every child's going to be taken care of, and they can't predict that. Therefore, they just crank up the rates. And so he talked about, and I love the fact that he's wanted to challenge these things. You know, what about, and I love the idea, let's figure out how to take care of everybody and move catastrophic things such as that, to that would be a government thing. You think, well, how could that work? And he brings up FEMA. If FEMA wasn't a reality in America, insurance companies would crank our rates up so high it would be ridiculous, and they would say, you know, who's going to insure you for the earthquake? Who's going to insure you for the massive hurricanes? It's governmental. That is catastrophic disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what about catastrophic FEMA in the medical arena that helps? And he says the reason why is because now the insurance companies can begin to be regulated, and they can calculate. And I don't know what the word they use, but
it's a risk assessment.
Yeah, risk assessment. Risk. It's a very predictable risk assessment now.
Actuaries.
Yes, actuaries. And it's very predictable. And so that means they can be overseen, like your local power company's overseen, like your water company's overseen. And they can be overseen. And then it's affordable for the average American. And you know that, quote, that we said in our concept of a country that if a hurricane hits you, if an earthquake hits you, and if a catastrophic disease or illness or terminal situation, something hits you that's considered catastrophic, that we have, what we did in our government, is something set up to catch you.
That's brilliant, because that way you're
right. Brilliant.
It's absolutely brilliant. Now you can, like you said, hold them accountable, because now they can. There's a risk that they can actually calculate. It takes all that other stuff that they can't calculate out the window.
Right.
And it's more fair rates for everybody.
Right. And so, I mean, I was just some things.
That's
like,
smart. That's
at
really
some
good.
Point, we got to start solving the problems. And but there is one continual thing throughout his analogy of things, you know, that is God, but also sacrifice that is going to require. This is a doctor. This is somebody that struggled through school. And I believe it was Harvard that he was going through, and the medical school after Harvard, I think it was. And he had to study from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. He realized that, hey, I was failing this thing because I just don't, boring lectures doesn't help me. And he had like 7 hours of lectures a day as a doctor he had to go through.
Wow.
And he says it's like learning multiple languages at the same time. You know, and we haven't even perfected English. So we
got that. Right.
And so what he made a strategic decision that he was just going to cut all those lectures out. But he also noticed in this evaluation prior to that, when he was making this decision, that he did well in the classes that he read. So what he chose to do, well, that's my strength. This other thing's my weakness. I can't learn that way. He decided to spend those 7 hours in reading about what they lectured about. And now look who he is today. I'm a brain surgeon who deals with the micro, you know, neuron, whatever, in the brains. I mean, it's just down to the minute things. We got to make tough decisions. I mean, that was a huge sacrifice he had to make personally. And you've got to read this book. If you have not read America the Beautiful with Dr. Ben Carson, you need to be able to read it. It will challenge you. I think we need to start groups in your community that just take it a chapter at a time, and it'll begin to get you to think outside the box and cause you to be knowledgeable enough to be able to ask those people who are asking your permission to represent you in government intelligible questions that causes them to think about if I'm going to go to D.C., if I'm going to go to a state capital, I need to go there with a mindset that I'm going to solve problems, not to cause problems. I'm not going there to extend problems. Mm. I'm going there to stop them. I'm going there to serve the people. And if I can't, why run for a leadership position if you can't lead? You know, and it's our responsibility as American citizens, because it's government by the people and for the people, that we need to educate ourselves in a way that, hey, at least learn from those who put the time into doing that, so we can ask intelligent questions to those that are running for office. They can respond back to us. And based on that, we could say, man, this person really gets it. They're willing to look to new ideas. They're willing to build a consensus of people. And it's just very, very encouraging. If you get a chance, read America the Beautiful by Dr. Ben Carson.
You're listening to VFN Radio. Don't forget, you can locate us at VFNTV.com. We'll be right back.
You know, what's so amazing about abiding is not that you're just able to hear the voice of the Lord for yourself, but that you're also able to help others hear God's voice. You know, Jesus said that we should not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of God. And it just reminds me of, you know, Maria. Oh, my goodness. Hears from God. You know, she learns to abide, and she hears his voice. And guess what? She follows what God says. And it's so amazing to see that not just for yourself, that how you can hear God's voice, but how you can begin to teach others to hear the voice of the Lord, and how they can spend time with God, and how they can abide, and how they can journal down exactly what God is saying to them, about them, and for them.
And she's so beautiful. You know, you can just see her transformation prior to hearing God's voice, you know, years ago, and as she began to hear the Lord's voice, and now openly today.
Yeah.
And now, you know, Patterson in New Jersey is being blessed. The Bronx, you know, in New York's being blessed. And so many people are being blessed because she hears God's voice.
That's right. Let me tell you, if you're looking for a simple plan, we have a simple plan for you. It's free. Just go to iabide.org. Request your simple plan today at iobide.org.
It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation, that stand with us prayerfully and financially, that just partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation, and this nation, by God's grace, to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. You know, it makes me think about what we're talking about. You know, you got to hear, if you missed it, you've got to hear what happened today in the first and the extra hour. You know, time is short, but it's short in regards to making a change.
That's right.
You know, we can make a change, or it's short in regards to somebody else making a change and we're living with it. But, you know, I think about this. There was this couple, John, there was this couple that had this child. And this child never talked. You know, most children kind of go, what? They begin like, ga-ga, goo-goo, something like that, right? Right? Is that right?
Or feed me.
Well, later on, yeah, it's like,
feed me.
No, and then you know, they took the child to the doctors. You know, and the doctor says everything seems all right. Everything's okay. And so they waited. Maybe they just needed some more time. And so the child grew older, you know, this toddler, you know, 2 or 3 years old. And he's like, you know, he's still not talking. Mm-hmm. He's still not talking. And so they just think, well, I guess he just doesn't talk, you know. And then he got around 6 years old and he still hasn't said a word. Mm. Hasn't said a word.
and they finally take them to another doctor. This listen, check them out. Make sure, you know. And they said, we looked him over. He has everything. He has all the parts. I mean, everything's there. I don't know why he's not talking, but he could talk. I mean, he has the thing. I mean, everything's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so on his seventh birthday, his mama fixed him breakfast, and his dad was in there reading the newspaper in the kitchen. And she puts his breakfast in front of him. And this kid that hasn't talked up until 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Seven.
Who has all these parts to talk. He goes, Mama, this toast is burnt like the devil. And so with that, the parents are like just jumping around and celebrating, and they're just so happy. They're just exhilarated that, oh, our son can talk. He can talk. We thought he couldn't talk, but he can talk. And they're just, oh, they're just how happy. And then all of a sudden they came to a certain point. They began to wonder, And so they looked at him. If you can talk, son, if you can talk, why didn't you say something? He said, up to now, everything's been okay. And let me tell you something. This is the church.
You're listening to VFN Radio, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's LIGHT, light. With your host, Greg Lancaster.
Of course, joining me is Pat and John. Dr. Ben Carson, we're just talking about his book, America the Beautiful. He also has a movie out. The movie is Gifted Hands.
Gifted Hands, Cuba Gooding Jr. is in that movie. Really good.
Cuba Gooding Jr. It's got to be good. He talks about it in the book that I was reading right there. The Dr. James Dobson. Y'all remember Dr. James?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, man, he's around every now and then, but he used to be a consistent daily voice in the nation. He founded Focus on the Family, and just a smart, polite, nice man that if you want to know about how to raise difficult children, bringing up boys, he wrote a book called Bringing Up Boys, and just strong-willed children. Marriage, family, everything about family, period. Good things, bad things, difficult things, dealing with children. That maybe you have a child that is born with a physical defect and you're believing God for their healing, but yet you're living out your life and you're asking a lot of questions. Listen, family.org, you hear them quite often on VFN Radio because we want to be able to encourage you as your family. But it's focused on the family. Well, Dr. Dobson, they did a study, and I can't quote the study right now, but I remember Dr. Dobson talking about it. And since we worked with and have worked with personally in law enforcement with the family situation and watching what was taking place, and even Dr. Carson's family, you know, where his father left at a young age and I had multiple wives at the same time, as he put it. And about fathering, and what they found out in this particular study, they did a study of families and fathers and divorced parents where children are growing up in single-parent households, which are primarily the mother at that time. And what they discovered, which is pretty interesting, they discovered through their study is that a father has to be present in his family for the attributes of a father to be able to come out of him. It just doesn't come out of him. It doesn't flow out of him. It's sort of like if you know, speaking spiritually, you know, that a prophet, for example, when you're prophesying or you're preaching, it's having somebody that you're speaking to. It's in that flow that begins to loose this thing inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
The Spirit of God begins to move. And in the context of that's how God, we're created the image and likeness of God.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can have all these theories about it, but the truth is, it's only theories until you have a family. And once you have a family, then you find out what's in you. And all of a sudden, you're pretty surprised what comes out of you. You know, in the context of that. But with that, you know, 75% of African-American children were growing up earlier on. The stats, I don't know what the stats are now. 70% of African-American children growing up in fatherless homes. 50% or 25 million children living in fatherless homes. Primarily, it is the after 2 years of divorce, they'll never see their father again.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the mother making it financially or geographically difficult for him to be able to get there. I mean, all these things are about pulling this father out of the picture. But at the same time, he's expected to be the father. He's expected to, I need you right now. Mm-hmm. And it's like, mm-hmm. Well, if you divorced me and you left me and you took our kids, and now you're saying you need me now. I could tell you, I could write damn still on the envelope by the time you're going to call him up if he's still around. I can tell you what age it's going to be. Yeah. I can tell you if it's a son or a daughter, when you're going to want to involve. And it's kind of really unfair at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the study that they determined is that who he is and who you are as a mother, but who he is as a father will come out as he's in the context of the family and in the role of fathering and being a husband. I'll take it to the next level myself of being a husband. Whatever our role is, you have to be in that before you can find out if you are that, and it comes out of you. God's designed it that way. But they proved it in a study about fathers, which means if you pull the father out of the picture, if for whatever reason, you say you can't get along with him or you can't get along with her, but yet you still have small children, you have to understand that at that point you're saying, I will no longer be able to effectively father my children. Whether it happens because, the mother doesn't want you around them, whether it's because it's geographically impossible for you to get to them because she moved to some other state and you can't afford to go there, or financially impossible because every time you raise an opinion, she goes to the courts and raises the money on you that mm-hmm. you have to pay. And it's like, I got it now. If I share my opinion, it's going to cost me this much money a month.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate thing is that his fathering traits that would have come out in the family are never going to come out. They're just not going to come out. I mean, he may be into sports. He may be into the other stuff. But it just comes out. And Dr. Dobson's reported this in the study, that it comes out in the context of family. And I also take it one step further. This particular fish, I can't tell you which fish it was, and I wish I had the study up, but I don't have it now. But and you put all these fish together, and this particular fish can change from male to female. And when this particular dominant fish is in there, in the aquarium, then everybody kind of just listens to what's going on or whatever they do, whatever fish do. But when this particular one died off, all of a sudden there becomes a battle for who's going to be the next person, who's going to be the next head of this aquarium, I guess. Mm-hmm. Little small fish. And once the fish becomes dominant and takes over the leadership role, it changes its gender.
Mm-hmm.
It changes its gender and takes on the male, and the other ones take on the female aspect of it. It literally, their environment changes who they are.
Interesting.
And in the context of that, it's not just being present in the family. You got to honor the roles in the family. If you are the mother and you act like a man all the time to your husband and to your kids, his very presence, the man's not going to come out of him. Mm-hmm. Just be the man. You just need to be the man. It's like, well, we got to take turns. When are you going to be the man and when I'm going to be the man? Serious. I'm serious. Because you're looking at the male attributes like, where's the man in the context of this? And if he is belittled, he's put down, he's not honored in that role, it's not going to come out of him. What you want to come out of him is not going to come out of him. And the opposite's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
They say when a man gets married, he begins to produce less testosterone. Well, I go further than that. I really believe that if you dominate a man, I mean, he probably just becomes all estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, something chemically happens inside of him.
Mm-hmm.
when he doesn't play his role. And it's like you can't tell a man, dominate a man, and say be a man.
Mm.
You just got to allow God to empower him and have other men around him to help him be the mm-hmm. man. But how can a man teach a woman to be a woman? How can a woman teach a man to be a man? And somebody, you know, quite often you hear, you know, some women say, you know, I just want to find me a man. And they're talking about how they want this man to be. And then they mm-hmm. find somebody of the male species and they begin to tell this man what how they want him to be. It's like, well, that's not a man.
Mm.
That's a robot.
Mm.
You know, that's a designer husband, mm. right? And in the context of women as well, in regards to allowing the mother to be the mother, to be the feminine aspect of the relationship, to honor that femininity. And but you have to understand, if you want to be the man, you got to play the man. If you want to be the woman, you got to play the woman. You can't play the man and expect to be treated like a woman, and you can't play the woman and expect to be treated like a man. There's something that will come out of people. I mean, men naturally honor, but they don't. They're not going to kick into some role of treating this man like a woman. You know, and I just want to encourage you in the context of this, if we just relax and play our role in society, if we just be who God's created us to be, if we relax a little bit, we trust God, and we just play our part. You play your part and he or she will play their part. And in the context of family, based on this study now from Dr. James Dobson, is that fathering in him will begin to just to come out.
Mm-hmm.
Like all these television programs and all these things where they belittle this father, it ain't going to come out of him. It's being repressed. There could be even a chemical change taking place. For the very fact he got married, measurably, he's already producing less testosterone, which is the male hormone. Well, if he's dominated, if he's belittled, if he's criticized, I really believe it's going to produce more of that. And you're going to find him seduced off into things and some other roles. And all of a sudden he's out somewhere else instead of in that relationship. And you don't understand. You should just let him be the man.
Mm-hmm.
And you be the whoa, man. So I just want to encourage you. You can find this study on Focus on the Family at family.org. And realize that we're just finding out in science what God has already done. He created the male and female. And we just pray, God, help us be the men. Help us be the women, be the women that you've called us all to be.
You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.